Hello and welcome to the Nation's Blind Podcast. I'm Melissa Riccobono and I'm here with my co-host,
Anil Lewis. And we are just back from convention. Well, not really, but it still feels like we're just getting back.
It does. I am having a very hard time getting back in the swing, I must say.
Well, I'm not having a hard time getting back in the swing. The swing is coming at me with full force, but it's a fun full force.
Well, the convention was wonderful this year, though.
Outstanding.
I mean,
my goodness. The speakers were just outstanding. The banquet speech was over the top. I think President Riccobono did a tremendous job of really communicating the organizational mission in a historical context that added value to all of our members.
Yeah, definitely. It was a great convention. Hope that if you were not able to be with us in Orlando, that you were tuned in, because there was some streaming of the sessions and the banquet and some nice interviews before sessions.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope that you were able to take advantage of that. But, you know, convention is always a great time for our groups and our divisions to meet, because there's lots of business that the National Federation of the Blind does.
Yeah.
And part of the way we do that is through our groups and through our divisions. And we have lots of different groups. We have our divisions, I guess, first. We have,
mm-hmm.
you know, blind teachers and
blind
human
merchants.
Services, blind merchants, blind lawyers, all sorts of things. And then our groups, one group is our blind parent group. And we were able to speak with Stacey Cervenka, who is just, and let me, before we go too much further, let me give props to Debbie Kent Stein, who founded the blind parent
Absolutely.
Group many years ago and has just been integral in making sure that that blind parent group stays together, that we had meetings every year at convention. So thank you to Debbie. But we're really excited to welcome Stacey Cervenka into a leadership role. And we had a chance to sit down with her and talk with her about our blind parent group and also about ways that all of the listeners to the podcast can get involved.
So let's take a listen to the interview. You're listening to the Nation's Blind Podcast.
So we're here with Stacey Cervenka. How are you, Stacey?
I'm doing well, and I'm really excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
We're excited to have you. Why don't you tell our listeners just a little bit about who you are, where you live, a little bit about your family?
Well, as Melissa said, my name is Stacey Cervenka, and I currently live in Lincoln, Nebraska, with my husband, Greg DeWall, and our two children, Leo and Josephine. Leo is going to be 5 next month, and Josephine will be 1. Currently, I'm mostly a stay-at-home mom with both my kids, although I do work 10 to 15 hours a week for the Nebraska Commission for the Blind, helping them stay abreast of federal and state regulations and make sure that they're in compliance and with everything that they need to be while still retaining their philosophy and objectives and all the wonderful qualities that make them a unique agency. And then I'm also, of course, the chair of the NFB Blind Parents Group, which is, you know, really exciting and something that I've only been doing for a few months. And so I'm really looking forward to doing more work with that as well.
Fantastic. Well, let's talk a little bit about the Blind Parent Group. First of all, what is the Blind Parent Group, and what kinds of things do you do as chair, and how can people get involved in the group?
Sure. Well, as many listeners will probably know, the NFB is made up of divisions and groups and committees, and the Blind Parents Group is one such, is one such group. Technically, we meet once a year at NFB National Convention, where we all get together in person, and we discuss a wide variety of topics that might be of interest to blind parents at any stage of their parenting journey, whether they're considering becoming parents, expectant parents, parents of very young children, or people whose kids are maybe in high school or even in college. So we all really learn from each other and talk about a number of things. We also host a listserv on NFBnet called Blind Parents. And you can find that by going to nfbnet.org, or of course by going to www.blindparents.org. And many of our members are also on a Facebook group called Blind Parents Connect. And while this group isn't officially affiliated with the NFB Blind Parents Group, many of the moderators are Blind Parents Group members. So there's, you know, a wide variety of parents in that group, but you'll definitely find a lot of our members as well.
I think that's a great way to continue to facilitate conversation. You're saying like the Blind Parents Group meets at our national convention, but obviously during the rest of the year, you know, that interaction between us as blind parents is important, you know, for my own efficacy, and hopefully what I have learned, the strategies I've learned as a blind parent, are also shared with others and helps them, you know, traverse those paths that I may have had a harder time walking.
I think the other really good part about it is that there's more than one way to do a specific task. And so as a blind parent, when you say, here's how I do it, maybe my way works really well for one blind parent, but another one says, no, I do it this way. And then that new parent says, oh, so I don't have to do it that way. I can do it this way instead. And that's really important to have those discussions and to have all those tools in your toolbox.
Absolutely. I mean, blind parents come from a huge cross-section of society. I mean, we have people, all races, all ethnicities, all religions, you know, a wide variety of age groups, of philosophies.
I found most helpful just the actual conversations with blind parents. I know that a lot of my angst around being a single father were addressed just through my conversations with other blind fathers. Because part of it is tools and strategies, right? But so much of it is also attitude and psychology around it. Because, you know, just like dealing with blindness overall, we have to deal with those societal misconceptions about our capacity to be good parents. We have to deal with society telling our children, no, you take care of them now, you know, all those different things. So just having the interaction, it's not even about how to change a diaper best or how to cook a meal. Sometimes it's how to deal with that ignorance out there that makes it so difficult for you to be a parent.
And, you know, I really agree with that because I think a lot of the logistics can be taught. I think it's the mindset in many ways that you really have to, that really is the hardest part. And I think it's that way for many parents, not just blind parents, but particularly for blind parents. Often it takes us longer to get our kids to a certain place, whether it's a friend's birthday party or taking them to day camp every day, like transportation takes longer or it's more expensive or whatever the situation is.
And I think it's really important to be able to have those discussions. And when we do have those days that are just bad days for whatever reason, it's nice to have a safe space to say, I just had the worst day. And then to have people talk to us about, oh, I know, I've been there. And sometimes we have really good conversations too, just particularly regarding the transportation. People brought up, people that have sighted spouses that drive brought up, well, yes, it seems really expensive and it's really expensive up front. But let me tell you, car repairs can be $1,000 at a pop. And when you're not really expecting to have to spend $1,000 at a pop, maybe it does kind of work out where it's about the same, even though it seems like we are certainly putting up more up front and it certainly is annoying waiting for that Uber or waiting for that Lyft and that type of thing, or waiting for that cab or waiting for that bus. So it's really good. And it's just good that we're talking about, we're having a place to have all these conversations. Mm-hmm. So I know that there's some great things coming up also for the blind parent group. I know President Riccobono mentioned it in his presidential report, but Stacey, I'm extremely excited because you're going to sort of join Anil and I in a space and have your own blind parent podcast, right? Coming up at some point soon?
Yes, we are super excited about it. I'm going to be talking with President Riccobono about this in the next few weeks. Hopefully we'll be able to, you know, set a date and time to start recording. But we hope to, you know, get this podcast out as soon as possible. And we're really excited about it. We really want to, you know, share techniques, share experiences of other blind parents, answer questions. You know, I often think that the purpose of the blind parents group is really, there's kind of four main purposes. Number one, we exist to serve as a resource for each other, to ask and answer questions for one another, to recommend tools, whether it's a car seat or a talking thermometer. And then I think, you know, we also exist to help blind parents who might be facing custody challenges. Like, we can point them to resources. We can walk alongside them emotionally when they're going through this. You know, we exist to reach out to other blind people who might be parents, but who might not know about the NFB and who might need the services and the support that the NFB has, whether it's Newsline or whether it's information about adaptive technology. So reaching out to parents in general and letting them know about what resources the NFB has. And then, of course, to educate the public about the normalcy and the challenges of blind parenting. And I hope that this podcast is able to touch on all four of these points.
Are there any other things that you would like to see the blind parent group tackle in the future? And how can people get involved in the blind parent group aside from Facebook and the listserv? Are there any other things that people can do to get involved?
Well, right now, the primary ways are through either the listserv, the Facebook group, or attending one of our meetings at NFB National Convention each year in July. But I am hoping to begin, I mean, maybe first quarterly and then maybe, you know, monthly or every other monthly, like conference calls where people can, you know, connect with one another and we can have a theme like, okay, you know, tonight we're here to talk about baby carriers or strollers or, you know, and a lot of this, and a lot of this is being done on our Facebook group and our email listserv. But I think sometimes it helps people to have a personal touch and to be able to ask questions in real time and get answers in real time. So I really do hope to be able to have some sort of conference call. So for this year, I think that's something that I'd really like. The other thing we really want to do is encourage people to sort of have local groups and local programs, the state and the chapter level, to support blind parents, whether it's an affiliate doing their own conference calls or having a seminar at their state convention, or maybe a local chapter has enough blind parents that they can have their own maybe monthly or bi-monthly field trip or get together or group or seminar or whatever. So, I mean, we also want to encourage people on the local level, because realistically we all live spread out over the United States. So there's only so much we can do during the year. There's social media, there's email, there's phones, but we can't necessarily have an in-person get together more than once a year. So I think it's finding ways for people to connect with each other on a local level where they can get together in person and someone can show you physically, this is how I pull a stroller and use my cane. This is how I wrap my Mobi wrap and put my baby inside it. Things that you just don't translate as well, maybe over email. A goal that I have that you know, sort of a pipe dream, but hopefully, you know, it will someday come to fruition, is there are so many parents who become blind after they're already parents, or they maybe they've been low vision their whole life, but they lose all their sight and, you know, they have to totally do things differently after they become a parent. Or they become a parent and they realize that maybe their blindness skills in a certain area aren't as strong as they may have thought they were. And I would love to find a way to get people together to have maybe a week or two of intense blindness skills training.
The other thing that I would say that we really need is just more feedback on the blindparents.org website, because we still have this blind parent initiative. We really want that blindparents.org to be the strongest website that we can have. And so we would love to have people getting involved with the group. Give us your stories. Give us your tips and tricks about different things. Give us your product reviews. I mean, all those things. I mean, the group and the Blind Parent Initiative are sort of one and the same. So we just want to make sure that we're providing as many resources on the website as we can. And the only way that's going to happen is if people join us and join the group. So Stacy, how do people get a hold of you if they need to get a hold of you and want to talk to you more personally about involvement, about the group? You've shared a lot of great information. So how do they reach you?
Sure. Well, they can reach me at my email, which is Stacy, Stacy.Cervenka, which is C-E-R, V as in Victor, E-N as in Nancy, K-A, @gmail.com. That's probably the best way. You can also, of course, find me by joining Blind Parents Connect or by joining the Blind Parents NFB group, which again, you can find out how to join that at www.blindparents.org. But email is generally the best. You know, another thing that I really want to convey is that the NFB Blind Parents group, the way that we make our mark as an organization is not just by having a few people at the top doing stuff. We're a group. We're a large number of people. We need to have everybody working. It's not just, you know, Stacy and Melissa do things all year long, and then once a year, everybody comes around and listens to what they've been doing and provides feedback. That's not realistic. Like, Melissa and I are volunteers as well. What we need is we need everybody to use their skills and talents.
Well, thank you so much, Stacy, for your time. And I'm super excited about the podcast coming up. Stay tuned to our podcast for information about the upcoming podcast for blind parents. And thank you very much, Stacy, for all of your work on behalf of parents that are blind.
Of course. Well, thank you for the work you do as well. And thank you for having me today.
You're listening to the Nation's Blind Podcast.
I really enjoyed that interview. The thing that stands out for me, though, that we didn't really give a whole lot of attention to, that Stacy mentioned very briefly, is that the work that we're doing also helps blind people that are considering becoming parents. And, you know, in perspective, you think about it, and based on society's perceptions of our ability that, you know, sometimes get internalized by ourselves, there probably are people out there actually wondering, you know, am I going to be able to be a parent or would I be a good parent? So I think this is really great to help them understand that that potential is there.
And it's so interesting that you say that. I actually had a chance to go to a training program for blind teens in Baltimore fairly recently. And I posted on Facebook that I was there and I was talking with them about babysitting, but also about parenting, you know, mm-hmm. kind of like, here's how you could babysit, but this is sort of ultimately how you can start preparing if you are interested Excellent. In becoming a blind parent. And there was this really great comment that came through. And this woman said, you know, I am a parent now, but she said, it is amazing to me. No one ever said I couldn't parent, mm-hmm. but there was never any discussion about how I could. And so wow. she said, thank you so much for doing this for these kids, because that's something that I just never had when I was growing up. And so when I did become a parent, even though in my head I knew I could, in my heart, I didn't really know how it was going to work. And so I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah. That's how I get excited about the work. I would hate for someone to think that they wouldn't be able to have that opportunity. Being a dad is probably, is the most rewarding, wonderful, my most proud experience, you know, in life. Although it's challenging and you know.
No.
It was easier with the boy. Because if I had a daughter, it would be awful. She'd be spoiled rotten. So what else are we going to do in this podcast that we're putting together as we speak?
Well, how about a presidential privilege, you think? You and the president can sit down and talk about stuff? How about that?
Yeah. Maybe about blind parenting again.
Oh, that might be a good idea. But I bet you might think of other things too as you talk with
him. As we always do, yes.
As you always do.
Because I do enjoy the presidential privilege, because you never know what we may be able to get out of the president.
Absolutely. Well, let's take a listen to The Privilege. You're listening to The Nation's Blind Podcast.
This is Neil Lewis, and I'm here with President Mark Riccobono for the Presidential Privilege portion of the Nation's Blind Podcast. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. My privilege to be here.
Oh, there we go. Got to start off right. You all rested up from convention?
Oh, yeah. Aren't you?
No. Because yeah, it's already planning for 2019.
Oh, yeah. We're ready for our biggest convention ever.
There you
coming
go.
Coming up.
There you go. Two big things. Outstanding banquet speech, of course.
And, thank you.
And just as an aside, I love the whole theatrics of the reveal at the board meeting. Everybody's wondering, where are we going to be in 2019? Where are we going to be in 2019? And all through the board meeting, we're going to be, well, I'll tell you a little bit later. Oh, that was excellent. Outstanding.
Yeah. Well, you know, some things just come together.
That's true. For our listeners, I will tell you, we're going to be in Vegas in 2019, and I'm sure we'll talk about that in the months to come.
Yeah.
We've
never been there.
Never? You've never been to Vegas?
No, I have, but the Federation Convention has never been there.
Yeah. We're going to have to break a Vegas rule, though, when we go there, because normally they say what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Oh, yeah, we're going to tell everybody.
Yeah. Exactly. This podcast has been about blind parenting, and I'm glad that we've had previous opportunities to talk about our own personal experience being blind parents. But now in the organizational context, you know, we're trying to make sure our listeners understand our commitment to ensuring that we have the tools and strategies and infrastructure to help blind people be blind parents. So I was hoping you would speak to that as an organizational priority.
Parenting touches, I think, almost every aspect of living successfully as a blind person, and also the barriers and challenges we face in society because of artificial limits placed on us, everything from real effort to diminish our equal rights by holding us to a different standard than sighted parents, facing low expectations of hospital personnel or social workers about the capacity of blind people, going out traveling in the community mm-hmm. as a parent, face maybe twice as much of the normal this and that blind people face, because some people get nervous that you're endangering this young one by toting them around, and sometimes doing it in a different way, mm-hmm. maybe pulling a stroller or using different techniques than other people use. And then, you know, all the access to information issues, trying to get information off the web, trying to file applications for schools, trying to use the school's online tools to get information from teachers. So really, parenting kind of throws a blind person into all of the various things that we work on as an organization. And the biggest problem that blind parents face is, I've never been a blind parent before. Mm-hmm. And of course, parents, first-time parents, are always in the new parent boat. There's no manual that's provided. So you have to learn from other parents. And if you're a blind person, you might not know any other parents who are blind, especially if you're not connected with the Federation.
Mm-hmm.
Until you're a parent, you might not spend much time thinking about it. So that's where our network throughout the Federation is important. And we have a blind parents group, mm-hmm. which the goal there is to have blind people who are interested in these topics connect with other blind people. And sharing these ideas, very important.
And I think that what you're describing in the context of blind parenting is what we do organizationally in so many different ways. So
right.
maybe we could bring the discussion to a broader discussion around the utility of divisions and groups within the Federation to meet these ongoing needs and problems in specific areas.
Yeah, well, of course, what we do is we organize the authentic experience of blind people together in this network, and as important areas of sharing emerge, we formalize them a little bit more. Of course, a lot of informal stuff happens just in this nationwide network that we have. You know, when we have our next national convention and we have over 3,000 blind people together, networking is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But then we formalize that in various ways, and groups is one. Groups come together to share information. They're chaired by an individual appointed by the president of the Federation, and their purpose is to really spearhead information sharing. And sometimes that leads to program development through mm-hmm. our national organization. Sometimes it just means getting together. Divisions are even more formalized, and I would say even more specialized.
Mm-hmm.
We have our National Association of Blind Lawyers, and, mm-hmm. you know, lawyers like to get together in their little clubs anyway. But they have a lot of very specific things they deal with around blindness and the law, that and having them formalized in that way also helps in some of our advocacy work.
Mm-hmm.
When we're working with the American Bar Association, as an example, that we can send something with the authority of the National Association of Blind Lawyers gives that extra degree of credibility. Well, you could
right.
do much of the same thing without having a division, but it's also a way to organize and create advocacy opportunities. And those things change. I mean, we've had at one time a piano tuners division. You know, piano tuning was a big career for blind people for a long time, and it still has some viability for blind people, no doubt about that,
right.
but it's not at the level it once was, because at one time it was thought to be the career for blind people. Now it's just one of many. There's still a need to keep those specialized resources
right.
available.
And you didn't mention anything about committees.
Committees really speak to the business of the organization, and specifically advising the president and the national board. Committees are appointed by the president, and except for our nominating committee.
Mm-hmm.
And committees, again, are really meant to help drive grassroots action and advise the national leadership on various things. So, for example, we have a membership committee that mm-hmm. discusses current membership concerns, approaches, outreach, and then advises the president on what we should be doing with membership practices, how we improve them, how we strengthen the organization. Other committees work on very specific policy matters. Our scholarship committee, one of the most intensive there is.
And I had the pleasure of serving as the chair for 3 years. That was one of the most empowering, just wonderful experiences I've had in the organization.
A committee that everybody wants to be on, but very few realize how much real work it involves.
It is a lot of work, yeah.
They just see the glamour of it. But that committee obviously has a very specific charge, but it works on providing mentoring and working with the young people coming into the organization. So the committees are appointed by the president, and so there's this great relationship between the grassroots and advising the national leadership. And we change the committees now and then. We create new committees when we need to. We change the shape and direction of committees when we need to. We used to have a committee for underserved populations. We've now evolved that into Committee on Diversity and Inclusion. The goals are largely the same, but we've changed the direction some. We've tried to sharpen it some, and that's always the goal with the committees.
And again, that's kind of a snippet of how we functionally operate as an organization to meet the ever-growing needs of the blind community. But again, we talk specifically around blind parenting on this podcast, and we're also going to be sharing a tremendous presentation that was given at this year's National Convention after this segment. But before we transition into that, I wanted to know if there's any other comments that you have to offer to our listeners.
Yeah, one of the challenges that we have in having these different organizational units, even having affiliates and chapters, is that we want to find ways to engage as many people as possible and at the same time organize to get work done. Divisions, groups, committees, the danger is that it divides the organization. The trick of all this is making sure it stays coordinated in one organization. It doesn't really do us any good to have an association of blind students if when they're done being students, it's not connected to anything else. So coordinating these pieces all together is what I think is the principal job of the president of the organization, and making sure that we have a cohesive strategy and plan. You know, that is difficult in a people's movement, I think.
Well, I'm glad you stated that, because you said in such a sterile fashion, most people might have thought that it's a simple thing to do.
That's the challenge of a big, dynamic, ever-growing organization, and that's where the ideas of individual members become important, too, because we always want to be having a fresh approach to what we're doing. And a lot of these ideas come from the individual members. Some of the new committees we've created are because members have come to talk to me about how we might do it. And sometimes it takes a while for them to bubble to the top. But that's the great advantage we have by sharing with each other in this organization.
And that's the way we really do practice what we preach around collective action.
So people can call into the podcast and give their ideas if they...
We always look forward to that. And we'll make sure they know how to contact us at the end.
Yeah.
But I think to summarize what you just said, we want to make sure we bring all of that to the organization. And as you always say, if it doesn't build the organization, or the goal of everything we do should be to build the organization. So in your own words, let's go build the National Federation of the Blind. You've been listening to The Presidential Privilege on the Nation's Blind Podcast. As always, I really enjoy having those conversations with President Carbono. I think that it, again, you know, makes people understand that the leadership is not untouchable, and the leadership is engaged, and the leadership wants all of our members to feel part, genuine parts of the organization. I often think about when I'm talking to blind parents, I meant to bring this up earlier, you know, when we were talking about perspectives of being parents or considering being parents. I'll never forget when we had some young students here at the center. This is back when Dr. Meyer was still president of the organization. And, you know, we were talking about parenting kind of impromptu, because Dr. Meyer was telling the students, well, I'm a father. I have two children. And then one of the students, you know, stopped me and said, whoa, how'd you do that?
So, oh, no.
Dr. Meyer had the classic answer.
Oh, what did he say?
He said, in the usual way. We sit here and we talk about, you know, blind parenting and, you know, from a parent's perspective and how, you know, we can do this and it's possible. But in the old school adage, the proof is in the pudding. You know, we could sit here and talk about being successful blind parents, and as we move forward with the initiatives and giving people the tools and the strategies and helping augment that with our philosophy of empowerment and independence. The best way to demonstrate that what we're talking about is real is let's see how the kids turn out.
I just think everybody should hear this speech.
Yes.
And I posted on Facebook after and said, if Austin, Oriana, and Elizabeth are even half as articulate and turn out half as well, Mark and I would have done a fine job raising them.
So we're referring to the convention presentation of Miss Joanne Gabias, who is the daughter of Mary Ellen and Paul Gabias, longtime Federationists in the organization. And there's no true testament to the ability of being an extremely good blind parent than the story that she gives at our convention. So rather than us continue to talk about it, let's let our listeners have a listen. Get ready. You're listening to the Nation's Blind Podcast.
Hello, everyone. My name is Joanne Gabias, and I am honored to speak to you all today. I was 4 months old when I attended my first convention. Although I've missed some throughout the years, this is my 21st. I have come to convention by plane, by train, by bus, and by car. I was hoping to go by boat next year, but it would be hard to accomplish going from Arizona to Vegas. Maybe 2020 will be in Hawaii or Puerto Rico. My convention experience has changed over the years. I used to be at NFB camp, or what is now called NFB childcare, with my brothers, Jeffrey, Philip, and Elliot. I remember at the Atlanta convention, all of the kids went to the Coca-Cola factory. I got really sick because I pigged out on all the free soda from all over the world. My parents normally wouldn't let me drink soda. That was an early lesson on how parental advice is worth considering, even when they're not there to make you do what they say. Once I was too old to be babysat, I started working for NFB camp, and now I am a blindness professional. Before you all think that my childhood is what got me into this field, I would like to point out that I never even knew the field of orientation and mobility existed until I was finishing my undergrad and didn't know what to do with my life. I loved my degree in linguistic anthropology, and I wouldn't change it for the world. But I couldn't make a living wage as an anthropologist unless I became a university professor, something I definitely didn't want to do. In fact, I always said I would never become a teacher or go into psychology because that is what my dad does, and everyone assumed I would follow in his footsteps. Well, now I know never say never because I obtained my master's in guidance and counseling, and I am currently an orientation and mobility instructor at Savvy Services for the Blind in Tucson, Arizona. I am here today for you, for your kids, and for the future children of blind parents. I hope that my story will help you convince doubters that children of blind parents can and do live wonderful lives. People made a lot of assumptions about my life growing up, some true, not so, and some not so true. Both of my parents are totally blind due to retinopathy of prematurity. When people learn that, I get comments like, oh, I'm so sorry, or wow, how is life growing up with blind parents, or oh, you must have been a big help around the house. Most children of blind parents probably can list off a bunch of other naive comments that we get all the time. My answer is always, well, I didn't know any different, so it was normal to me. And quite frankly, my childhood was a pretty typical one. During my schooling at Louisiana Tech University, I attended immersion at the Louisiana Center for the Blind. Even after my immersion ended, I attended a seminar at least once a week throughout my entire program. One time, the seminar question was, "Who was the first blind person you met, and how old were you?" Pam Allen called upon me to speak. I told the group that I was in kindergarten when I met my first blind person. Clearly, that's an odd question coming from a child of parents who have always been blind. It was in kindergarten that I first realized what people meant when they used the word. Before then, my parents were just my parents. My parents fed me, dressed me, and took me to school. My experience wasn't any different than anyone else's. I also thought it was weird at the age of 4 that everyone would say to me, "Oh, you must be a big help around the house." Like, what the heck was that supposed to mean? I'm 4. I'm pretty sure that those comments ingrained in me and my brothers a determination to do the least amount possible around the house outside of our chores. Even getting us to do those were hard. So, Mom, next time you have to yell at Elliot to take out the trash, blame it on the world for making us want to prove the stereotype of saintly children helping their poor blind parents wrong. I was spoiled. My mom made my breakfast and lunch every day until I graduated from high school. Even in university, if I asked or if she saw I was stressed with work or school, she would make me food. When I go home to visit, I have a list of favorite foods that I ask my mom to make. As everyone knows, there are just some things that taste better when mom makes them. There were expectations, too. On each of our 13th birthday, my mom taught us how to use the washer and dryer. She said, "You're a teenager now. I'm no longer doing your laundry. If you want clean clothes, you'll have to do them yourself." My family has always been very health-focused. My dad runs the Gabias Wellness Center out of our family home. Some of you might have met him in the exhibit hall talking about all the Niken wellness products they offer. When I was younger, my dad was very strict about what we ate. My brothers are so lucky that he let up as we got older. But as you know, parents are always the hardest and the most cautious with the firstborn. I even have proof. All the pictures from my first birthday party show my dad following me around, making sure I was okay. I was running away with an annoyed look on my face. I already wanted to be my own person. By the time they had their 4th child, parents are just satisfied that the youngest one is wearing clean underwear. When I was in kindergarten, my mom made a cake to bring to my class for my birthday. My parents had chosen to not have chocolate in our house, so my mom tried to make a cake using carob. If you have never worked with carob, it frankly tastes like dirt. My mom made carob frosting as well, a double dose of yuck. Carob doesn't spread well. The frosting started clumping and breaking the cake. It was just a mess. I think Apple must have seen a picture of this cake because they made an emoji that looked exactly like it. I think VoiceOver calls it the smiling pile of poo. I remember that day so vividly. The teachers tried to shh the kids when they asked why the cake looked so weird. The teacher assumed that it was because my mom was blind. I was annoyed because I knew it wasn't my mom's blindness or her cooking skills. It was because of that stupid carob. Mom can bake good stuff. I planned a surprise sweet 16 party for my best friend, and my mom made a giant chocolate, real chocolate, heart-shaped cake with raspberry filling. Everyone loved it so much that all of my friends asked her to make one for their birthdays as well. Misconceptions, confusing problems caused by other factors with problems caused by blindness happen all the time. My family lives in the beautiful Okanagan Valley in Kelowna, British Columbia, Canada, minutes away from a spectacular lake. When I was 10, my family bought a speedboat. Growing up, we spent most of our summer on the lake, water skiing, tubing, wakeboarding, and swimming. Our family knew a man who drove for us. It was only natural that he would also drive our boat. When I was 12, our driver had a stroke and was in the hospital for most of the summer. My dad tried to hire random people to drive the boat. The cab driver he chose bent the propeller when he ran aground. The 21-year-old son of a friend gouged a side of the boat while docking to the cost of $250. Dad was so annoyed with incompetent boat drivers that he started looking into the boat license process. He found out that 12-year-olds can get a boat license in Canada. Conveniently, I had just turned 12, so I was volunteered. He paid for me and two of my friends to get our boat license. Dad sat in the class as we learned nautical rules and took the licensing exam, which we all passed. The only problem was that we completed the class without ever coming near a boat. The next day, my dad took me out on the boat at 6 a.m. when there weren't many boats on the lake and showed me what all the controls did. His family owned a boat when he was growing up, so he's been around them all his life. Whenever my dad gets a new gadget of any kind, he figures out every button, lever, or widget. So he knew exactly what to do with his boat. I remember being extremely nervous because of my dad's high expectations. I remember my dad telling me, "Put it in full throttle and turn the wheel." That scared me. "We're going to flip." He said firmly, "If you don't do it, I will. You need to know how the boat will react and to whatever you are doing." Everything I learned about boating, towing a water skier, docking, and just cruising along, I learned from my dad. I would like to point out, that I have never put a scratch on our boat, and neither have my three brothers, who were also taught by my dad. When we all started to learn how to drive cars, my dad insisted that we take formal lessons. Dad went to every lesson with us. My dad went through the program 4 times, to be exact. If he couldn't make it to a lesson, he would have to reschedule because he wanted to make sure that he knew what we were being taught and that we were doing what we were supposed to do when we were driving alone. Even though he wasn't the one directly teaching us this time, my dad was very much at the center of our driving experience. As I grew older, I became more and more independent. I traveled all over Canada and the US. I even went to France, Guatemala, Mexico, and Belize in high school and college. Even when you're legally an adult, there are sometimes you still need help from your parents. When I came back from Guatemala, my cell phone stopped working. I had insurance, so I brought it in to get it fixed. I spent 3 months contending with loaner phones that didn't work, and my original phone coming back to me more broken than before. I was complaining to my mom that they kept giving me the runaround, so she came to the store with me. My mom is a very calm person. She doesn't really raise her voice, but when she's mad, you know it. My mother calmly but powerfully explained that this was unacceptable and they needed to figure things out. Just like that, I got a new upgraded phone at zero cost to me. If I had known that this would be the outcome, I would have brought her in the first place. This skill is something I still don't possess. I think my brother Jeffrey inherited this skill. Luckily for me, I can still call on my mom when I'm in need. Some kids are denied the chance to grow up learning from their parents, especially children of blind parents. When I was in the 5th grade, my life could have changed drastically. Some random lady came to school and separately pulled my brother and I out of class. She started asking me questions about my parents, whether my father hit my brother, or if I was safe at home. I thought they were the weirdest questions ever. I was sure that they took the wrong kid out of class. These questions didn't even remotely make sense in my life. When I came home, my mom was very upset. The random lady had been to our home too. I told her about my experience. My mom became livid. She had not been given the courtesy of being told that they would be interviewing us at school. The weird lady was from social services. Someone made an anonymous call about my parents. The complaint was that my dad might have hit my brother, or spanked my brother. Our house was messy, and that my brother went to school with a dirty shirt. Can anyone in the audience tell me that your house is never messy and that your kids or you have never dirtied a shirt? I sure can't. After talking to us kids and visiting my parents at home, they realized that the complaint was unjustified. Luckily, they never bothered us again. But that one incident has lingered with my mother to this day. All of her children are legal adults, yet she still wonders who called social services. We all know that social services didn't show up because my dad might have spanked my brother, or because of a messy house or a dirty shirt. They came because the caller said that both parents were totally blind. That was the real issue. It didn't matter that my mother was a stay-at-home mom or my dad was a university professor. Even though we had a parent at home to take care of us and a parent making sure we had the money to live a happy and prosperous life, the thing that mattered to the social workers was that my parents were blind. I know that many other parents have either experienced this visit or live in fear of this visit. I recently testified at the Arizona House of Representatives in favor of the Right to Parent bill, which was passed and signed into state law this spring. One of the committee members was asking a lot of naive questions about how my parents knew when we were doing something wrong. He seemed convinced that I probably got away with a lot of things because my parents couldn't see. I told him that when my brother Philip was still in preschool, Mom took him to the grocery store with her. While she was busy in the checkout line, my brother quickly grabbed a pack of gum. On the way out, Mom noticed that he was being very quiet. She heard him fiddling with something. She did a quick search of his pockets and marched him right back into the store and asked for the store manager. She made my 5-year-old brother confess what he had done and apologize. Then she paid for the gum. The store manager said, "Well, you paid for it now, so you can have it back." My mom said, "Absolutely not. I am not rewarding this behavior. Throw it out." My brother was so embarrassed, he never stole from a store again. The committee member seemed unconvinced. He said, "Well, he was young. I have teenagers. It's really hard to keep track of them." The ways my brothers and I got caught may be unconventional, but no matter what, we always got caught. In middle school, the fad was to have your midriff showing, a fad that happens to be coming back recently. It's funny how many things have come back from the 90s. Shout out to the 90s babies out there. Well, I wasn't allowed to show off my belly, but I wanted to be fashionable. Besides, it was hard for me to find shirts that fit because I've always been tall. I've been 5'9 since the 7th grade. Before I left for school, my parents would ask for a hug. This is how they would sneakily check to see if my shirt was long enough. My dad would ask for a hug from my brothers to check their breath to see if they had brushed their teeth. I could go on and on about all the ways we got caught. So when someone says, "Oh, you must have gotten away with a lot of things," I just laugh because they are so, so wrong. When I was in high school, I did an exchange program. Sarah, a girl from Quebec, was to spend 6 weeks in my home, and I would spend 6 weeks in hers. We had to fill out a profile about our life, interests, family, parents, what they did for work, etc. There was no line asking if my parents were blind, so I didn't write anything. It wasn't important to me. We got each other's paperwork in June, but Sarah didn't come until the end of January. On her way to our home, she met the program coordinator, who remarked on how brave Sarah was to come to a home run by two blind parents. Sarah started freaking out. She even called her mom. Her mom told her that she should just see what it was like before she panicked and came home. When Sarah arrived at the Kelowna airport, my dad and I were waiting for her with a big sign saying, "Bienvenue Sarah," welcome Sarah in French. We picked up her luggage, which my dad carried. When we got home, Mom made her a snack, and we talked with my parents for an hour before my new friend and I went to my room. She finally told me about her conversation with the coordinator and said, "I realized once I got here, your parents are super normal, but why didn't you tell me before?" I told her, it wasn't important to me, so I didn't really think it was necessary to say anything. As things developed, I was happy I hadn't told her. When I asked her what she would have done if she had gotten this information in advance, she admitted that she wasn't sure she would have even come. Sarah had a great time. It became so much more than a nice trip. We call each other sisters to this day. When she had a semester off a few years later, Sarah decided to come back to Kelowna and live with us for 3 months. Not only do their flesh and blood love my parents, so do all my friends. Sarah was not the only one who lived with us either. I had 4 different friends live with my parents over the years. My house was the place to be. I wish my grandparents could see our family now. My grandmother was very upset when my dad married a blind person. She didn't have a problem with him being blind, but she was scared that if he married another blind person, their children would grow up socially awkward because they wouldn't learn any visual social cues. My grandmother died when I was 1, so she didn't get to see any of us grow up. I know my grandmother is biting her tongue up in heaven right now. My mother, Mary Ellen Gabias, used to work at the national office in the 80s. She was in charge of the job opportunities for the blind. My father, Paul Gabias, met my mother through that program briefly and then again while attending a leadership seminar. My mom happened to be one of the ones giving the tour for the seminar group. If you have ever been to the national office, you know that everyone helps out where they are needed, no matter what their position may be. Well, my mom says that that was the worst tour she ever gave. Anything that could go wrong did. The ancient freight elevator got stuck with everybody on board, among other minor disasters. My father, however, knew he had found his future wife, even if she didn't know it yet. So I would like to thank the National Federation of the Blind, because if it wasn't for this community, I would not exist. Although I may not be blind, this is my family. I am a Federation baby, and this is my family reunion. I am part of the next generation of Federationists. The next generation may not all be blind, but we know that blindness is not the characteristic that defines you, me, or your child's future. Every day, we live with high expectations of blind people. We don't understand why there are low expectations. We are the result of the dreams of blind people. We live the lives you fought for. We know that blindness doesn't hold you back because you have taught us. Thank you.
Wow. You know, I don't even know what to say.
Yeah, we warned you.
Yeah, yeah. I just get chills, and it's just so, so wonderful.
Yeah.
I just loved that speech, every part of it.
The humor, the emotion.
Yes.
Yeah, it's something we're going to use as a tool for education for years to come.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. And what a great piece of education it is. We have talked a little bit in this podcast about getting involved and how our divisions and our groups and of course, certainly at our local level, our chapters and everyone gets involved in the work of the National Federation of the Blind. But, you know, there's work beyond blindness. And I think sometimes the great part about being involved in the National Federation of the Blind is that you either get involved because you're already very active in advocacy work or in your community, or, as happened for me, this work inspires you
to do more
yeah. and to get involved in other ways and to truly live the life you want by being involved in your community.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we would love from our listeners this time around is for you to share with us either ways that you are currently involved in your community. And and again, when I'm saying involved, I know you're involved in the National Federation of the Blind, or I hope you are. What are other ways, though? What are you doing in your community that is different, that is beyond blindness.
Yeah.
Or if you aren't doing something yet, what are things that you'd really like to do and are looking to become involved with?
Mm-hmm.
And we would love that kind of feedback.
And I'd also be curious if there's someone out there who, because of blindness, feels like they have not been able to do things that they previously did in their community. I'd like to know where that is to build that out.
So please send us voicemail, 410-659-9314, extension 2444.
You can email us at podcast@nfb.org.
Or keep the Facebook and Twitter, the tweets and the posts coming, National Federation of the Blind on Facebook, mm-hmm. or on Twitter @NFB_voice. And we're happy and excited to bring you a podcast next month all about community involvement and greater involvement, how the National Federation of the Blind is involved in the world in general.
Mm-hmm. And until then, remember, you can live the life you want.
Blindness is not what holds you back.